Hello, hello. I can't believe we're back. Episode 21. It's been a few weeks, maybe longer than a few weeks, maybe a month or more since I've sat down at my desk and, gotten down to business here with the podcast. I hope I remember how to do this. I probably will, but bear with me, 'cause I might be a little rusty. How are you doing? I'm doing great. I guess I've just been working on other projects since I took a little hiatus from the podcast. And in other news, I was actually supposed to have surgery, cosmetic surgery last Friday, and in an unexpected turn of events, I had to cancel my surgery and start working with a new surgeon. So that was a pretty major deal for me. I've just been chilling, working on stuff with my commercial production company. Making money, and just trying to move forward in life. Otherwise, I also wanted to tell you guys about this new Facebook group that I started. If you're on Facebook and you're interested in sober topics, sober books, sober thoughts, sober discussion with other people who are just cutting back on alcohol, questioning their relationship with alcohol, or just have been sober for a while. We've got a good mix in the group right now. It's a small group, but it's pretty cool so far to just see people like go in there and post their own thoughts about getting sober and all of that. And if you've tried it, you know that it's like a pretty big deal, and you need a lot of support sometimes from other people. And holy shit, I just realized I didn't do my intro. Okay, pause. Episode 21, let's do the intro. Okay, back to the lecture at hand. I created this Facebook group for people who are interested in cutting back on alcohol or people who are sober and have been for a while. It's called, if you're on Facebook, you can go on there and search Sober Curiosities. And that's my group. That's my shit. So go check that out. It's a private group, so you have to request to join, but I'll just approve you if you want to jump in there and dip your toe in the waters of sober curiosities, sober thoughts, sober feelings. Another big update since the last time you heard from me, I have new merch, okay? It's merch that was inspired by this podcast, but it's kind of just like my lifestyle brand, Diaries of a Pretender. And I have a few shirts, and I have a really badass champion sweatshirt in the store, along with the shirts. And I'm gonna have new stuff rolling out throughout the year. As I come up with new drops, I have so many ideas. I don't want to just like vomit them all up on the store at the same time. I gotta take my time, parse it out, give you a little taste. Anyway, so go check that out. I'm gonna be sharing more pictures of me wearing the stuff because I actually do wear all of the stuff like all the time. And yeah, it's pretty cool. Diaries of a Pretender merch. You can check that out. I'll put the link in the show notes. But it's on Etsy. If you search on Etsy Diaries of a Pretender, you'll find the store. So go check it out. Okay. I think that's everything that I have to share on the top today. And I'm actually going to be sharing with you guys a conversation today between me and my creative partner, Christian Wallace. I think I've probably talked about him before on the show. I've definitely featured him in one of my YouTube videos about the documentary that I'm working on. So I thought it might be interesting to just, you know, talk it out with somebody else for a change and see what came up, see what came out. And if you're interested in filmmaking and how to find a creative partner, that's probably the most surprising aspect of the whole thing is how Christian and I met. If you've ever tried to find a creative partner, you definitely know how annoying it can be. You meet people that either don't want to work on your stuff and only want to work on their stuff, or they're not motivated and you can't get them to do shit, or they're just too busy. They have a family. They're talented, but they have a family, or they have a lot of free time, but they're not talented. You know, it's like, it's very rare in my experience to find a good creative partner to make stuff with. And of course, you can't make everything by yourself. You can make a lot of things by yourself, but you can't make everything by yourself. Sometimes you do need help. So anyway, let's jump right into it. Here is a conversation with myself and Christian Wallace. So why don't we just talk about how we met?
Okay.
So what's your version?
My version?
Yeah.
We met on an app. What app? Did we meet on Bumble?
Yeah.
It was Bumble? I couldn't remember if it was Bumble or Tinder.
Oh, so you were just spreading yourself around on multiple apps. Okay.
Yeah.
I was not. I was only on Bumble, so that just means I'm a little better.
Well, that was 3 years ago.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So you were looking for some random hookups on Tinder and then looking for a relationship on Bumble. Got it.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
So we met on Bumble. And then, was it September of 2018 or was it October? It was September, wasn't it?
I think it, late I don't September. Know. That's not the interesting bit.
Oh, okay. What's the interesting bit? We met on Bumble. We should do an ad for Bumble.
Why?
I don't know.
We met on Bumble, and I think it's important because it's hard to meet, like, creative partners, right?
Yeah.
Like, good ones. So we actually just got lucky that we met each other on Bumble, and now we, like, work really well together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost, like, hard to meet a creative partner that you like, that you get along with, that's talented, that's motivated, that does good work, and we just accidentally found each other because we were bored, like, looking to go on a date.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, I don't know how you would meet, like, a good creative partner. Like, I was working with people making stuff, you know, before I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I thought that those were, like, really good creative partners. But you are a better creative partner. And, like, you don't meet people like that. I feel like just going to networking events or, like, you know, even if you meet somebody on a job or something, a lot of times they don't want to, like, go fully into, like, a partnership.
Yeah,
you know what
true.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
You look like you don't know what I'm saying.
No, I do know what you're saying. I was thinking about that because, like, I've had that a lot where you meet people that are creatives and it's either they lack the motivation or they have, it's like they want to do it, but they're not as motivated as you are. And you're like, it's just, Yeah, it's difficult. You go through a lot of, I don't know, say like, I'm trying to think of the term I'm looking for. I mean, it's an experience you're learning. You're on a, like a pilgrimage, I guess, of like trying to find creatives. Like, you'll meet plenty of people that you might end up working with later, but like not in the same like capacity that you and I work in. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah,
Like,
you didn't go like as far into the story as I thought you were gonna go
about
about
what?
how we met and how we started
Oh, I
working
wasn't done
together.
yet. Yeah.
Well, you weren't done?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and finish it.
Okay.
Okay. So then after we met, we like went out to drinks, and then the famous thing that you always talk about is that I was making, oh my God. Excuse me, one moment. The famous thing that you always say about the first time we went out was that I was putting lighting matches and putting them out on my tongue.
Yes.
So, okay, that's one thing. Then, of course, after that, I ended up telling you later that I didn't like you that much after our first date, and you got extremely offended. And I thought that was just like a cute thing that people talk about later after they like get together. Like, oh, I didn't even like you at first. But you, of course, did not find that amusing at all.
No.
Okay, so.
But because first impressions are important. So obviously you feel like I felt like, oh God, I didn't make a good first impression. But I thought completely different story, as I thought we got along really well.
We
And
did.
I thought you did like me.
Well,
And I thought it was cool because when we met, we talked about Christopher Nolan movies and like how Memento was your favorite film or one of your favorite
Yeah, I
films.
like Memento.
And then we just talked about Kubrick. When I mean, we just started talking about movies and we didn't stop talking the whole time, and so I thought that, you know, there was never like a lull in the conversation. At least that's my experience. And then we finished up at the Irish pub, and then we walked to another bar where that's where you did the match lighting.
Right. So we were bar hopping
Just
and
two bars, though.
just, you know, whatever, just getting wild, putting matches out
That's
on
as wild as it
my
got.
tongue.
But that's as wild as it got. So, I mean, it's.
That's true. So then, though, after that, I was working on this little web series that I had written and directed with some other people. And I think I just told you, like, just in passing almost, because you put on your dating profile that you were an actor, and that was like, you know, hard for me because I was like the pickings were so slim on the app to begin with. Like it was just like garbage after garbage after garbage. And then like you, I mean, lots of people, I've discussed this with a lot of other women too in Atlanta, but like there were not a lot of good choices on dating apps. Anyway, so it was like a lot of just uninteresting prospects. And then I saw you and I thought that like, okay, like maybe I could get along with this guy, but he wrote on here that he's an actor. I don't really want to meet an actor. But then I just went for it anyway, just out of sheer desperation. And it turned out that you're actually a lot more than an actor, which of course was like more appealing to me because I didn't want to just meet somebody else who was trying to be an actor. But okay, so then I think I told you just in passing or in like casual conversation, I'm working on this web series, and the person we have that's editing it is like gave us the edit and it's horrible. And you know, like the jokes are completely lost because it was supposed to be a comedy. Like it's not looking good, and I don't know what I'm gonna do. Like, I asked her for the footage, and I'm waiting to get it, but I don't really know. I don't know how to edit. Like, I guess I was using iMovie at the time. I was like, well, I'll just fucking edit it on iMovie after I get the footage. And then you were like, oh, I can help you with that. And I was like, really?
Were you doing iMovie with that? I didn't realize that. I couldn't
No,
remember.
we didn't do
You
anything
didn't do
with
anything. You
iMovie.
were.
That's what my plan
No, that's
was.
what I'm. Yeah.
As I had edited
So you had.
my stuff for my documentary, like my fundraising stuff that I was doing for my documentary, I was like shooting all that on my Sony Handycam, you know, and then I was editing it on iMovie. But I had actually learned a bunch of like tricks and like backdoor stuff, like to make titles and stuff on iMovie that were, I don't know if you remember, I did one that was like a typewriter typing. And I like did it in like the most like backwards ass like way where I made like a PowerPoint presentation with a green background, did like a green screen composite on iMovie to make it look right and to do the animation in the PowerPoint. It was like ridiculous. But my point is, I was like reverse engineering iMovie to try to do what I needed to do because that's all I had at the time. And then that was my plan until I told you about it. Mm-hmm. And then you were like, I can help you with that.
Yeah. Well, I had just, like right before that, I think it was like a year before that, I had edited this little horror comedy thing that these people that I knew through a friend of mine were actors, they were doing. And so I had edited that. And that was the first thing that I had done that was like a narrative on my own without anybody's help. And I did that in one night. And just, it was just like a 2 or 3 minute thing. So I cut that together. And so I had like, I had that experience of doing that all by myself, of like doing all the audio. And it was kind of in the same vein. It was a horror thing. Comedy, yeah. Which I love horror and I like horror comedy. And so I thought it was a great idea, which you had. And I think that was part of it too, was I was excited about it because I thought it was funny and I thought it was a clever idea. And, you know, I wanted to help out with that. And like, I was going to say though, I'm totally getting off. I'm going to go on rants.
Great.
But no, I'll just like
cut this part out.
Yeah, I'll just cut it. Talking about like what you were talking about with iMovie. I think it's important though that people, if they have these tools, start working in that. Because when I was a teenager, I did stuff in Windows Movie Maker and things like that. And I was just take anything you can and start there. It doesn't matter if it's Adobe Premiere, because a lot of people get in their head and go, oh, I can't start until I've got this. I can't start until I have that. And you can't get in that headspace or you're never going to do anything.
Yeah, that was an important lesson that I went through with my documentary, with my fundraising campaign. Like, I didn't have anybody to help me shoot it, and I didn't have a camera, but I had a Sony Handycam that I used to film my auditions. That's what people used to use before everybody had an iPhone. Mm-hmm. I sound like I'm, like, 1,000 years old saying that, but it's true. Like, we used to have, like, a... Before the Sony Handycam, we used a flip cam. I'm old enough to remember the days of using the flip cam to tape auditions.
Was the flip cam the...
No, it was like a rectangle, yeah, and it had a USB that like flipped out of the side. Mm-hmm. It was like one of the first like HD. Did HD exist back then?
When I first started auditioning, I just used my little Canon Rebel T2i. Because it was like 2012 when I started doing tapes.
That was probably nicer than my Sony Handycam. I don't know, but that's what I had. So that's what I used to shoot my like promotional stuff for my fundraising campaign. And it looked shitty, but you know, like what choice did I have? So I just went ahead and did it.
Yeah, but if you hadn't had that though, you wouldn't have had anything to show me.
Right, so it did help.
To get me to go, oh, okay, I'll...
Yeah, so it's just like to your same point.
Right.
Just do whatever you have with what you have. Anyway, after you brought your computer and all your stuff over to help me edit...
monitor. Giant monitor.
Yeah, to help me edit Ghost Stories. I thought it was really cool, like, how you sat with me, like, all night to get this done. Whereas our other editor, like, didn't want us around when she was doing the editing. So we had no clue, and I had no clue, like, what it was like to actually sit down and sit through editing, like, as a director with an editor. That was the first time I ever did that. And that, I feel like, just awakened something in me. Because it was really fun. And it was really cool. And, like, you were really taking great care to, like, make all the cuts exactly right and like spend as much time as we needed to spend on it. So I think that was the point that I knew that we could do great things together.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is like when you, I was so hungry because I had met people that like were really great filmmakers, but they're doing their own thing. They've got a whole like crew. They're trying to make their films and they're going off and doing their thing. And I've always just loved collaboration and being like in like, that's what I like about film is we would always say when I was at the Savannah College of Art and Design, we'd always say it's like summer camp in a way when you're on a film set, because it's like you're with all these people, you're getting to know new people, and it's just like a fun experience. It's like, if you like to do, and I do, I like to meet new people, I like to have new experiences. And I think that for me, it's, I love doing this so much that finding somebody that is talented and like had a vision, and it's so much fun to like find, when you find that and you want to work on it, you don't want to stop.
Yeah. And I think it was lucky too, that you had as much free time as I had to devote to all this stuff. Like, I feel like since the time we met, and then of course you started working on my documentary with me like very soon after. And then from that point on, we've just like worked on stuff together the whole time that we've known each other. And it's like been almost 3 years now that like, if we're not working on a film, then you're like taking pictures. Or like, you're just taking pictures in a corner. Just of me.
Just in a corner taking pictures.
You're taking pictures of me, you know? And yeah. I don't always like them, but you know, sometimes I do. And we're doing that too, you know? Like, we're always like doing something or coming up with something. Then of course we started a business together. And that's been great. So we don't have to do like, or you weren't doing, you were already making videos for your supper, but I was doing like shit jobs whenever I would have like a long time between acting jobs. I was doing like something that I didn't want to be doing. So now it's like, I don't know. I think meeting you has been like probably the most transformative event of like the last 5 years.
Yeah, I was thinking, well, I was going to say what you were just talking about how I had the time to work on it. So like that was one of the
things. Wait, you had a huge missed opportunity just then to say that meeting me was also.
Oops.
Yeah, yes, oops. But no, I'm go ahead. Go back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I tell you this all the time. Like, I have never had a creative partner that I've like worked with like you. I've been looking. I feel like I was always like trying to find somebody to work with like you, and it's okay. I mean, it's all the weird little things like we talk about. I know it's like synchronicity stuff of like how your father and I were on the same episode of Turn.
Oh, together, yeah.
And we're staying in the same hotel years ago. How you and I lived very close to each other in North Hollywood and didn't even know. Like, we were just a block away from each other.
Yeah.
And we would both go to Idle Hour and didn't even know that the other person... Now everybody's going to know where you're at. They're like, oh, she was over here. No.
That seems
cut
like...
Cut that out. No, I'm kidding.
Well... Yeah, it seems weird that we would both be living in that neighborhood. You could have just abbreviated and just said we lived in the same neighborhood.
We lived in the same neighborhood.
But now you've told all of the info.
We lived in the same neighborhood.
Doesn't matter. We're not going to move back to Toluca Lake.
We might.
I
like Toluca Lake.
Yeah, it was fine. It was whatever. I didn't have a car when I lived there, so it was like I walked everywhere. So that was kind of
good.
That was shitty. It was like 110 degrees and I would just be walking, you know, just like listening to headphones.
But walking at night is great there. Anyway,
excuse me, women can't walk at night.
Women can't walk at night. I probably shouldn't have been walking. I shouldn't have been walking at night.
I'm offended you would even bring that up knowing that I can't do that.
You can't do that. I shouldn't have done it. I did it with a friend of mine though. So I was like, I wasn't alone.
Well, good for you.
I never did it alone. But anyway... What was I was going to say about?
Yeah, there was just strange occurrences before our meeting that like we actually were in each other's sphere without really being aware of that.
Yeah.
It is pretty weird that you and my dad were on the same episode of Turn.
Yeah. And then what was I going to say? I'm trying to talk about. Oh, yeah. Talking about. Okay. So like when I was acting, the first thing I did was working in production as a production assistant. And wanted to act and all that, just didn't know, like, trying to figure out everything and wanting to know, like, how the ins and outs of behind the scenes as well. So, I remember wanting to, like, I didn't want to wait tables. It just didn't appeal to me. And I wanted to do something to where I was working in the field. Even if I was just behind the scenes, I didn't care. Like, I wanted to know as much as I could about film and television and movie making. So,
but other people have some attitudes about that, or like some people say that if you want to be an actor, you shouldn't work like as crew.
Sure. I don't know.
I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I know people say that, but to me, it enabled me opportunities where I got to know people, and it. So one thing, I was working on Geeks Who Drink with Zachary Levi, and I met a PA there that ended up putting me in his web series, The Bloodletting, which is one of my favorite things I've ever done. And it was a 6-episode web series we shot in 2 days. And I mean, I'd love to do more with that, but I got to meet a great writer, Devin Arnold. And he's a fantastic writer. And if I hadn't been working set, I would have never met him and had that opportunity to play an awesome role.
Yeah.
And I've met great people. I learned more about, like I said, the ins and outs of filmmaking. I've had great experiences with actors and meeting people that were encouraging. And it's just been a great experience for me. But to go off what you just said about how they say that you shouldn't work crew, I wanted to get away from being a PA. I didn't want to do it anymore. This was in like 2015. So I was doing videography stuff at the time. And that... I was able to do the editing on Ghosted Stories because I had just done a month of shooting and editing for, a huge company. And I got that done. And I was able to, because of saving and, you know, watching my spending, I didn't have to take a job for a couple of months. And so I was able to do creative stuff. Yeah. And that's what I was doing. I was working on my short film at the time, which I'm still working on that, you know,
Yeah, I wanted to talk about all of the unproduced ideas and scripts that we have between us. Since we met, we've had like, I don't even know how many ideas that I have written that now we just have as unproduced scripts, and ideas we've had that have not been written yet, and things that are works in progress. Like, how many shorts have we written and we haven't made yet? Because there's Lorraine. There's the one that you were working on whenever we met.
Which I still am.
There's Upstate, which mm-hmm. I still want to do. There's the Untitled Black and White Horror.
They're all horror movies.
No, there's Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, that's good.
What else? Is that it?
That's it. But to be fair, the pandemic happened.
Okay.
And we didn't have
crew.
But before that,
Saying it's a problem. No. I'm just saying, like, over the last 3 years, we've had so many things that we've started to do. And then, the one that we did about the no sound or whatever that was. The test shoot.
What's that called?
Where you had me poke my ears out.
I had you hammer your eardrum with a spike. It looks great.
And then we didn't finish it.
But it looks great. But like sometimes you just have short films that I just didn't want to put something out there that just didn't feel like it.
Yeah, it was a good test shoot.
It was a good test. It had some cool shots, but like to me it just didn't have, it was fine, but I don't know. Well, what ended up happening was we ended up doing that Vera for that contest.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. So the one thing that we actually in the way of narrative that we've actually finished together and done completely on our own was Vera, which was a 60-second horror short that we did for a contest. And I think I learned a lot on that in the way of like dealing with lighting and stuff. Because so we decided like we kind of wrote it together and or did I write it?
We wrote it together. I had an idea and then you were like, okay. And then we just kind of.
Yeah. And then we've argued a lot about that over the years too. Whenever one of us or whenever you have an idea and then I write it and then we end up arguing because you don't like the way I wrote it. And then I'm like, well, if you don't like the way I wrote it, then you should write it. And then you're like, well, I want you to write it, but you didn't write it the way that I see it. And then we have to argue about that.
We should find out what Christopher Nolan and Jonathan Nolan do. How do they write something? They're brothers.
Maybe they just, like, I don't know. I don't want to speculate. Anyway, so we wrote Vera, and then you were directing it, and I was acting in it. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first thing that we had to, like, hash out to get this done was you were, like, you were very concerned about the lighting. And I was like, well, let's just use, you know, fucking natural lighting. Whatever it looks like is what it looks like. This is a 60-second film for a contest. Like, nobody's going to be doing, like, major things for this contest. Ours is going to be amazing. And let's just use natural lighting. And you were, like, getting really frustrated. And you were saying, like, that's just not even possible. That's not going to work at all. So we ended up going to Home Depot and buying work lights.
Shouldn't say this. This is so bad.
No, it isn't.
So what you don't do.
No, it isn't. It's not bad. It's really not. We bought work lights, and then you bought, like, colored gels that you put over the front of the work light.
So backing up, though, really quick, we had great airy lights, but we couldn't use them because they would blow the fuse in the house and could burn it down. We didn't have a generator. We had expensive film lights that we got from a friend, and we couldn't use them.
Yeah. Well, see, that doesn't even, I don't even, I do remember that, but I didn't care because I was like, who gives a shit? Like, we don't need huge lights to make a dark, scary horror film that we're doing, like, you know, at night in a house. Because the whole premise of the contest was that a knock on the door comes at 4 a.m. and then what happens from there. Mm-hmm. And you could interpret it in any infinite number of ways. So I was thinking, like, it takes place at 4 a.m. It's going to just be dark. Like, if there's a street light shining in through the window, that's the light. Like, whatever. If we have candles, that's the light. I didn't think that it was necessary to, like, fuss about with this, you know, lighting issue. I thought it's a non-issue. And then I realized, though, after we bought the work lights from Home Depot and put the blue gels over them, and then it, like, changed the entire feel of the scene.
Yeah, because you couldn't see anything before that.
Actually worked really well.
But, like, the wide of you walking through the kitchen, that's that little LED light panel that was outside going through to have moonlight. Because, I mean, it's, whenever you're doing that kind of stuff, it has, you get away with it because it has a certain look, because it's intentionally supposed to be kind of campy, like a horror movie, like an old retro horror movie. That's kind of the vibe. And so you can, like, get away with it being work lights and having that blue tint, because it had a feel, like everything had a certain vibe to it.
Well, then once I watched the other, like the ones that won the contest, because of course we didn't win the contest, right, even though ours was really amazing, mm-hmm, and really good. Mm-hmm. The winners of the contest, and, like, basically all of the entries that I watched in the contest, they all had, like, some colored light. They had either, like, red light or blue light or, like, really warm yellow light. And I realized on that is important to, like, take care to, like, nighttime lighting isn't necessarily just nighttime lighting. Like, you have to be intentional with the kind of lighting that you're doing. And that's something that I didn't know, as being somebody who never had engineered lighting on a set before. I just, you know, had walked onto a set before and, like, been in a scene, or, you know, somebody else was always taking care of that. So in my journey to, like, figuring out how to direct, and which I wasn't directing that, but, you know, like, to make my own stuff, you have to think about those kinds of things in a way that I hadn't thought about them before. So that was a good learning experience for me. And also, we did that with no budget and with only 2 additional helpers that were, like, doing stuff for us on the set. Mm-hmm. So that was, like, really cool that we were able to do it with such a small crew, such a short period of time. And it turned out really great. Mm-hmm. If anybody wants to watch it, it's called Vera, V-E-R-A. And it's on Christian's YouTube channel.
Is it on yours?
No. Well, yes, it is. It's on my YouTube channel. Yeah. It's on my playlist, videos I'm in, on my YouTube channel. Yeah. Anyway, that was good for us.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing, and that's the thing, is, like, even that, though, the lighting's not. Because that's the thing. It's like, I like to do natural lighting because I come from doing, like, the in-house documentary stuff for businesses where you can't have lights with you. And you're not supposed to do anything, like, elaborate. So you don't get to do that. You just have to do flat, kind of just basic outside, just making people look visible. And because the corporations, they don't care about that. They just wanted to be able to hear what they have to say, see these people. But there's something in that, though, that you can get beauty with, like, natural lighting. A lot of, like, every cinematographer that I love is like that. It's Roger Deakins, Wally Pfister. They're very much into natural lighting and not, like, super stylized. Like, they use what's there. I mean, 1917's, like...
Yeah. Yeah, watched the whole, like, mini documentary on the 1917 Blu-ray where they talked about that. Yeah. So that's something else that you have contributed to my life since I've known you, is that you're, like, you're always buying me Criterion Collection Blu-rays. And, like... I guess before I met you, I didn't own a Blu-ray. I certainly didn't have a Blu-ray player. And I just didn't care about Blu-rays. I was like, you know, like, you just watch a movie. You watch it however you watch it. Like, I could watch something, and it's from all the years that I've spent, like, moving around from place to place with, like, everything that I take with me just being in a suitcase, that I just have a laptop. I could just sit in bed, watch a movie on my laptop, and or I can watch it on a postage stamp size TV, or I can watch it in any quality. And, like, it doesn't matter to me because that's just what I've gotten used to over the years. And then you are, like, very much a stickler for, like, the version that you watch, the kind of TV you're watching it on. And you're, like, you're impressing that upon me. But it's actually, it's nice. It's nice to watch a movie on, like, a nice TV that's big enough where you can see it, where the picture's clear, like, the quality's good. And then the other day when we watched, you got my dad for Father's Day the, what's it called? The Last Train from Gun Hill with Kirk Douglas. And it's like a special Blu-ray that just came out or something. It's not a Criterion, but it's like a restored version from the original 1958 film.
59, yeah.
I think it was 58. It's 59. It said copyright 1958 on the DVD.
I'm pretty sure it's 59, but you're probably right. It's probably 58.
We can
discuss it. It's Paramount Classics, which is, like, that new thing that they're... Yeah, it was weird because, like, your dad and I watched that a couple months ago. And then he was like, you've got to watch this movie. And we found it, and it was this crappy... I can curse, right? On that. It was this shitty thing, and it was, like, squished... And everybody was taller. Like, they had squished it in on the sides to fit, like, an old, like, tube TV, I feel like. And so that looked like shit. But the movie was great. I thought the content for the time period, it was very, like...
But you said something the other day when we watched it that, like, about how people miss out on movies like this because they're such shit quality that really takes away from the experience of watching it. You can't appreciate, like, the artistry that went into making the film, which there were a lot of films that were made with an incredible, you know, sense of artistry back then that are beautiful to watch, beautifully acted. But if you're watching it like a shitty version with horrible quality, it's, you don't get that. And I thought that was interesting because it's true. Like, watching the restored version of that movie, it was beautiful. And it was so good. I loved it. But watching it, like, in a lesser quality, it's hard to appreciate it or even to, like, pay attention because it's just like, oh, I'm watching some, like, old, weird, like, Western. Which, it's not an old, weird Western. It's really good.
Yeah, it definitely, like, pushes, like, in the story pushes, like, the way that things were for that time. I feel like it's not... Well, they talk about that, and that Leonard Maltin talked about that in the little supplemental feature where it was like, this was not a kiddie Western. It deals with serious stuff, and it is. It's very intense. I don't want to give anything away, but, like, you should watch it, because Kirk Douglas is great. I love Kirk. I mean, if...
Yeah, I want to watch all his movies
Have you seen Passive Glory? No. Stanley Kubrick. It was the first thing. It's what led to them doing Spartacus, which...
I haven't seen Spartacus either.
Spartacus isn't as good as Paths of Glory, but Paths of Glory is one of the
greatest. Paths of Glory?
Paths.
Paths.
Of Glory.
Paths of Glory.
Look it up on your phone. I want to make sure I'm saying it right.
No, I'm actually sweating profusely.
I'm not. How are you sweating profusely?
Every time I sit in this chair, I start sweating profusely.
So...
Now I'm extremely...
why don't we take a break? Uncomfortable.
No, we're not going to take a break.
I have to go to the bathroom.
No, we can't take a break.
I have to. You can?
We cannot take a break. We've got to just finish this.
Okay, so anyway...
Okay.
I guess you'll have to have me back on. I used to be like that, like you just said about the laptop, but there was like a thing that clicked. I guess it was last time I moved back to LA. I grabbed a tote and put all my Criterions and like my favorite directors, like that collection of movies, and took them because I was like, I have to have these with me. Even if they just sit on a shelf, it's like this, it's a status thing, I think.
It's a status thing.
It's like, look, I know about movies. I've got these on my shelf.
Oh my God.
No, but I don't know.
Okay, did you want to talk about what celebrity you look like?
No.
Did you want to talk about your experience ending up on the cutting room floor the first time that you ever acted in a movie?
I guess I was acting.
You weren't acting? You were hired as an actor, but you weren't acting?
I mean, I don't know. I was just looking into the camera and all of that. But yeah, I mean, the first thing, looking into the camera? The first thing I was hired to be in was The Reluctant Fundamentalist. With Riz Ahmed and Kate Hudson, and it was directed by Mira Nair, and I did this scene. It was the first thing I'd ever done, and it was a great experience. She was lovely. She was so kind, and Riz Ahmed was fantastic. So was Kate Hudson. They all were just lovely people to be around, but I did this awesome scene. I had this super awesome close-up on my face that was like gonna be in this feature film, and they took great care, and I had a photo shoot that I had to do that they were with Kate Hudson that they were gonna put up in the background, and I couldn't wait. And then it finally came out. It was like an IFC film, I think, or I can't remember what happened. It was like it didn't like have a wide release, and then when I finally saw it, I wasn't in it, but I still have the credit on IMDb.
How did you watch it?
I think that I rented it off Amazon.
And so you just, like, watched it at home by yourself, or did you, like, invite people?
No, I just watched it by myself.
And then what did you do when you realized that you weren't in it?
I was just like, shit. I didn't get,
like... I highly doubt.
No, I really, I was disappointed, but for me, I had already started doing stuff at SCAD when it came out. So I had already had, like, short films that I was doing and, like, acting in, and I was having fun doing that. And I had the credit on IMDb, and I mean, that was...
So you didn't care?
I really, like, to be truthful, I'm not trying to put on a front. I really didn't, like, I was disappointed, but I didn't, like, tell a bunch of people.
I remember my first time that I had something end up on the cutting room floor, and I was really pissed. Like... Actually, I guess it was The Last Exorcism Part 2, which was not the first thing I was in. It was like maybe the third or fourth. I think it was the fourth movie that I did. But it was the first time, I guess, that I really had like more than one good scene where I was... No, the first thing I was in, I had a bunch of... or several good scenes. But in this movie, I thought it was going to be like really cool. This is a cool horror film. I had cool stuff to do in it. And then I ended up dying because I got possessed by Satan. But my friend Ashlyn and I were both in the movie, and we were roommates at the time. And our friend Lee Hardy surprised us the night that it opened, that the movie opened, and we met him at dinner, I guess, and we were all gonna go see the movie together, and our other friend Tiffany was there too. And then we walked outside of the restaurant, and there was a limousine
outside. And he was like, get in, girls. We're going to see your movie. We're going to go see you on the big screen. And this actually was the first time that I was going to see myself on the big screen, because the other movies that I had been in either didn't get a wide release, or like the host got a wide release, but I basically did nothing in the movie, so there was nothing really to see. So this was the first time I was going to see myself on the big screen. So we were really excited, and we were like drinking champagne on the way there. And then we got to the theater, and we're like sitting there, you know, like eyes wide, can't wait to see, you know, like this movie that we're in. And all of the scenes that I was in and that I had dialogue in were cut from the movie. The one scene was cut entirely. The other scene was cut in such a way that my lines were cut. And then the scene where I die was the only scene that I was in. I mean, I guess you saw me like in atmosphere, you know, like in scenes, like hanging around in the movie, but I wasn't talking, I wasn't doing anything, and then I just die in the movie. And I could not believe it. I was like, oh my God, all of my good scenes like are not in the movie.
But from a story standpoint, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why not even just cut your death? Like, if you just like are in the background, then you have a scene where you die. It's like,
well, they had okay. they had to show the death, because it was like, you know, like it moved the story in some way, because all the girls that live in this house saw somebody get possessed by the devil, basically was it. It was about a bunch of girls that lived in like a halfway house. And one of the girls who moves into the house is the girl from the first movie who was possessed by the devil. So, but we had shot this whole other scene where like we were writing in journals, and they like filmed everybody's journal, and mine was the one where I was like drawing crazy shit, like the devil was doing something to me, and then like the lead actress and I like lock eyes, and then I like mouth something to her and like scare her, and I thought I was like, I'm doing great things in this movie, and then it was all gone and just my death. And I couldn't believe it. I was really like bummed about it. And then it was like extra embarrassing, because my friend had like gone to such great lengths to be like, your big screen debut. Oh my God. Here's a limousine for the girls, the, you know, great actresses. And then it was just a huge disappointment. But of course, I lived to see another day, and, you know, it's all good. And it happened to me again after that, you know, things getting cut.
What was the first thing you had done before that? Was it Shadow People?
Shadow People was the first movie I was ever in.
No, it was the, and then The Host was the second thing that
came. No, I did Freelancers after that.
Okay. Host was the very first thing, right?
No.
No, I thought it was.
No, Shadow People was the first thing. So yeah, ending up on the cutting room floor, unfortunate, and happens all the time.
I seriously have to go to the bathroom.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Are you just going to end it?
Thank you so much.
I still have stuff to say.
It has been so nice.
Okay, so I guess that's
it. It has been wonderful having you.
I feel like I didn't say anything.
Thank you for coming on the show. You are the first guest ever to be on Diaries of a Pretender. Have you ever listened to this show before?
Mm-hmm.
Don't lie.
I did.
Okay, thanks for coming on. Christian Wallace, everybody.
So do I just exit?
There's your round of applause. Just exit to the right. Thank you.
That's the left, though.
Exit to your left. Meet you downstairs. All right, guys. You're still here. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. And I'm probably going to be doing more conversations with other interesting guests in the coming weeks. I have some plans for the show. Of course, I think I will continue to do solo episodes like I've always done. But, you know, sometimes it's nice to change it up, add some texture, you know, and just see where things lead, see what comes up. I am still going to continue with a
drink of the week for you guys. I'm not drinking it at the moment because I'm just not prepared, okay? I've got too much going on. I'd lose my freaking head if it wasn't attached to my shoulders, okay? But I have been sipping on this new drink. It's called Ghia. G-H-I-A, Ghia. I actually posted about this in the Sober Curiosities Facebook group too, because this is a really cool drink. It's marketed as a non-alcoholic aperitif. So it's like really, really bitter, like I guess Campari or something. But it's good. If you like bitter, check it out. It's the drink that I've been having is the Ghia Spritz, and it comes in a little can. It's like such an adorable can. It's honestly a travesty that I don't have it to show right now on my video. Pretend maybe I'll just like drop in a picture of it. Ghia La Spritz. Okay. By the way, are you watching the videos? Because we're cranking out videos over here on the YouTube channel. I have video of that entire conversation that you just heard and of this that you're hearing right now. Okay? Add the extra layer. You know, listen to it now and listen to it later and watch it too. Throw it up on your TV on YouTube and let the ambiance fly. Okay? YouTube. Raiden Greer on YouTube. I don't know if it's youtube.com/user/Raiden Greer. I kind of think it is. You know how to find it, okay? You know what to do. And then also for this week's movie of the week, unsurprisingly, it is The Last Train from Gun Hill. And I cannot tell you enough what a good American classic adult Western this is. I actually haven't seen all the Kirk Douglas movies, but I really, after I saw this movie, I'm dying to see the Kirk Douglas collection. He's just like the ultimate, like badass, you know, American cowboy movie star. And he really gives everyone the business in this movie. He's kicking ass, he's taking names, and like we talked about in the conversation, if you get a chance to look at the restored version of this movie and you're watching it on a nice TV, it's honestly incredible to look at. It looks like it was made yesterday. It doesn't look like it's, you know, a 70-year-old movie. It looks like it was literally like they're just sitting in the room with you. It's amazing. So if you have access to that, you know, check that out, the Paramount Blu-ray. And if you don't, let me just see where else it's available, because I'm never prepared like I need to be. Where to watch? I'm Googling it for you. Google with me. Okay, it's on Amazon Prime. Okay. You can rent it. Ooh, SD. Don't rent the SD version. Yeah, you gotta watch the HD. If you can't get access to the HD, it's honestly not worth watching. But it's an amazing movie. It's incredible. And if you've ever wanted to watch just like a cool ass American movie with American men doing American Wild West things, this is the movie. Don't forget about The Wild Bunch. This is the movie. The Last Train from Gun Hill. I promise you, you will not regret watching this movie. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thank you for joining me back on this first episode post-hiatus of Diaries of a Pretender. Write me at podcast@raiden.me. Don't forget to rate and review the show to, you know, spread awareness of the movement here. And yeah, follow the show on Instagram. Check out my YouTube for video versions of these episodes. Thanks for tuning in, guys. I'm so glad to be back. I'm excited. Go out into the world today and you be excited too, okay? All right, see you next time.